Alrighty, folks, welcome back from a short break, and with us joining us in studio here this morning is Brandon Bass with the Law Offices of John Day, and today we're going to be talking about something that a lot of folks have probably dealt with in the past, and that's alcohol-related accidents and what you can do if you're involved in one, if somebody maybe hits you and they've been drinking, or somebody overserves somebody you might know. We're going to clear that up for you, and of course, we're taking calls, so if you want to join us, 615-893-1450 is the number to give us a call, or you can text us. People have been texting pretty heavy on this morning, so feel free to shoot us a text, and we'll get that set up for you regardless. Good morning, Brandon. How are you?
Good morning, Nick. I'm doing great.
Fantastic. So kind of start us off. What are we going to be discussing this morning? There's some unique laws involved with people who have been involved in alcohol-related accidents, whether they have been overserved or whether maybe somebody who's been drinking runs into you. How does that all play out? I know that's something you probably deal with pretty frequently.
Unfortunately, we deal with it far too often. The good news is here in Tennessee, we punish those who take other people's lives in their hands by drinking too much and then getting behind the wheel. I had a trial just earlier this year against a gentleman who had taken some prescription medication and decided to get behind the wheel. He had a long history of driving under the influence, had a lengthy criminal history for doing so. We took that case to trial, and we were able to get a nice verdict. The jury understood how serious his crimes were and how serious he had injured someone. We've taken cases like that to trial. We also look at cases where there's a bar owner who decides to just keep over-serving somebody. The law in Tennessee is once somebody is obviously intoxicated, you got to cut them off. If you continue to serve somebody once they're obviously intoxicated and that leads to a crash against someone else or someone seriously hurt, the bar owner can be responsible. So Tennessee does have laws to protect people from the carelessness and recklessness of others that are critical.
And I know today we're not talking as much about somebody who may have been behind the wheel that hit somebody, but this is kind of from the other side for someone who had been hit, or again, the overserving. I want to back you up for a second. You had mentioned a gentleman who had been under the influence of some prescription pills. Does that kind of fall under the same category, whether it be drugs or alcohol? Driving under the influence kind of covers both of those. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The fact is, if you're even too tired, you shouldn't be getting behind the wheel. Okay, any driver has a responsibility to everybody else on the roadway and pedestrians on the side of the road. We don't need to be walking down the sidewalk and having to worry about whether a driver is going to pass out at the wheel and strike someone, or strike a child, strike a baby, anyone else. So if you're under the influence of alcohol, don't get behind the wheel. If you're under the influence of prescription medications, or even taking too much over-the-counter medication, you're feeling woozy, don't get behind the wheel. And the same thing is true for illegal drugs or anything else. The fact is, it's unsafe. Our firm, we actually have a program we set up in conjunction with MTSU and Lyft. MTSU plays Duke, for example, this weekend. So we have a program where we will pay for rides home on Lyft up to $5,000 in total for anybody going in Rutherford County to make sure that they go home safe. You just punch in the code that's available on our website, and I can give it if you need it, because it's a critical issue in Tennessee. There's far too many people who are hurt or killed as a result of someone getting behind the wheel when they shouldn't.
Now, have you noticed, and overall in general, a difference in a number of alcohol-related accidents now that Lyft and Uber are everywhere? I mean, I got a friend that does Lyft, and he'll go on there, and there'll be like 90 people in Murfreesboro just waiting to pick, and it's $3, $4, $5 to get across town. Has that helped, or are people still driving under the influence as much as maybe they did 30 years ago?
It's a great question, and I don't have the data to be able to gather it, because we also seen in the last 10 years, Middle Tennessee's population spiked. So there's still people getting hurt, but it's a great question. I'd love to see if I could go through the numbers and say, do we have fewer people who are careless enough to get behind the wheel when they've had too much to drink? But unfortunately, we've got more people, so the numbers end up to be about the same. I'm not sure. My experience is about like yours. It's so easy to get on Uber or Lyft and just hit the button and get home. It's not the days where you'd sit and wait for a cab and wait and wait and wait. That's always been a great resource. But there's no excuse when there's apps available, Uber and Lyft's in just about every town, and you want to get to the airport at 4 o'clock in the morning. There's probably somebody driving ready to pick you up.
Yeah, and that's a great thing. And I think a lot of folks, when they get into that situation where they're drinking and driving, maybe that's a great option. But I think a lot of people, in their head, they say, I'm okay. I think that's kind of where you get in trouble. It's not that I don't have a ride, because you can usually find a ride. You can call somebody, you can call a friend if you want. But I think a lot of people maybe think that, well, I'm okay. I've only had three or four. And sometimes three beers is all it takes to be above the limit. And, you know, they say, I'm okay. You know, I've only had three. But, you know, often I think it's a choice they make, not that they don't have a ride. So I would hope that the surplus of transportation with Uber and Lyft would make a difference, but maybe not. You know, maybe people just decide they think they can do it.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, when people drink, they make a choice. Mm-hmm. They make a choice to put themselves in that position. We go out. If you're going to have drinks, plan ahead and take an Uber there. Don't worry about leaving your car for the night. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about leaving it in a parking lot. But leave it in a parking lot if you've already had anything to drink. It's just a much safer approach. There's really no reason to get behind the wheel. And as you were saying, it may be three beers. You may have three drinks before you're over the legal limit. But the real critical factor is, first, you got to worry about the law, but also, frankly, you have a moral responsibility to everybody else. Mm. If there's any possibility where you're tipsy, quote-unquote tipsy, don't get behind the wheel. You can always get a ride. The way blood alcohol works, the way alcohol works in your system, it depends on how big the person is. We always see somebody who's 300 pounds can tend to hold a few more beers than somebody who's 110 pounds. Mm-hmm. But it also factors into what you've had to eat. Have you taken any medications or anything like that? So you never know. The one thing you know is if you're drinking, then you do not need to be getting behind the wheel.
So unfortunately, we are going to talk about that today because people do make that choice. So how can we clear things up for folks if they're getting into an accident and the other person had been drinking, or they think they may have been drinking, maybe they're on prescription pills? How does that all play out? What do they need to do? They need to contact you guys and say, you know, John Doe rear-ended me. They were drinking. What happens after that?
So if there's an intoxicated driver, if it's a John Doe, as you said, and that unfortunately it happens sometimes too. We've seen hit and runs where somebody hits and they take off, mm-hmm. and we have to go track down who that was. We start looking for surveillance footage. In 2019, there's usually some surveillance camera on just about every corner, mm-hmm. in every commercial area. You go downtown Murfreesboro, somebody's probably got you on camera. They might not be watching it at the time, but there's a computer somewhere storing footage of that for at least a little while. So we have to track those people down, look for license plate numbers and etc. But if we know that they've been intoxicated, we know they've had too much to drink, or they were under the influence of drugs, oftentimes that comes in because the police have arrested the person from the beginning. Then there's a matter of starting to look into, why did that happen? Who is really responsible for it? Obviously, the driver is responsible. They have made the choice to get behind the wheel. If they had too much to drink to even make the decision as to whether to get behind the wheel, they made that choice not to get rid of their keys and to put themselves in a position where they could drive. That's a choice that someone makes. But then also, how did they end up overserved? Tennessee does have laws that prevent bars and restaurants and things from over-serving. Just about every server, they have to take the ABC course to get their license to make sure that they can sort of spot the signs of someone who's starting to get too drunk to be served. And we tend to get their credit card bills. We get the receipts from the restaurants. We get the surveillance footage from inside the bar, and we are able to look at it and see, well, this person came in at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And the only time they left the bar stool between then and 10 p.m. was to go to the bathroom a few times. Mm-hmm. And they never had anything but a full pitcher over and over and over again, running up a $150 tab, mm-hmm. while sitting by themselves. At some point, that bar owner, that server needed to cut that person off and stop serving them. I'm sure you've been in a restaurant before where you've seen somebody who has had too much to drink. Mm-hmm. And their owners did the right thing and asked them to leave, may have called them a cab, made sure they got a safe ride home. Excuse me. That's what should be done. Unfortunately, it doesn't always happen. Sometimes people just keep on drinking. They keep on getting served. And by that point, it is way too late. The person is way too dangerous behind the wheel.
And for that case, you know, having four or five beers and being over the limit, but the person is still coherent and, you know, they're planning on getting a ride home, would be different than, you mentioned, somebody drinking for 9 hours. Completely different, because, you know, as restaurants and bars, they make a lot of money on people who quote unquote have too much to drink. But that's okay as long as they get a ride home safely. And that's kind of where the bartender maybe needs to improvise a little bit and say, okay, this guy is getting a little wily and he's talking about going to get McDonald's on the way home. Maybe I need to cut him off. Maybe, you know, just compared to somebody who maybe has a little more than they need, but they're planning on getting a ride home.
Sure. It is not any bar or restaurant's responsibility to make sure that nobody has too much to drink.
Mm-hmm.
We can't sit around and watch everybody else and do the little police thing where they shine a light in your eyes before somebody orders another glass of wine with their dinner and say, we need the person to walk down, turn around, and come back. We're not going to do that in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what we expect is, once somebody is now visibly intoxicated, at that point you need to shut them down.
Okay.
In normal times when you file a lawsuit, you have to prove, more likely than not, you got to prove there's a pretty good chance that the other person did what you say they did.
Mm-hmm.
When you sue a bar or restaurant for over-serving somebody, the standard's even higher. You have to prove, like criminal law, beyond a reasonable doubt,
mm-hmm.
that they were visibly intoxicated. So we're not going based on close calls, based on whether a server looked at somebody and maybe could tell that they were a little bleary-eyed or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the times where the person's head's fallen down onto the table. We're talking mm-hmm. about the times where nobody could take this many shots that the servers just continued to bring back around. At some point, you need to shut the person down. Frankly, you also need to do it for their health. Alcohol poisoning
mm-hmm.
comes in at some point. So when they've gone way over the limit and put someone in a position where any rational server would have recognized, they're already drunk, but I'm going to keep on serving them 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 more drinks after that, and I'm going to have them still sitting here drinking. I'm not going to give them time to sober up. I'm not going to offer them a glass of water or anything else. I'm just going to keep cashing their tips,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure that those tips start going up as the mm-hmm. person gets more and more drunk.
Mm-hmm.
If they just keep on serving that, then at some point they're responsible as well.
So when you say they're responsible, the bartender as well as the establishment could both be held, because the bartenders are licensed. So they're supposed to, again, have a conscience and kind of know what to do and how much to serve. So they could be in trouble. Maybe they could lose their license, but also the establishment could face fines and other stuff as well.
Yes. Tennessee's got the Alcohol Beverage Commission that licenses out for food and beverage, and they're mm-hmm. subject to a bunch of requirements. They keep a file on everybody who has a beer or a liquor license and keep track of any times that they've been caught serving somebody who is underage, or they also have requirements for you got to serve so much food. In Tennessee, we don't have necessarily pure bars.
Mm-hmm.
Most counties say you got to serve food. We're going to allow these things. So
mm-hmm.
if you technically serve food, but in reality you haven't actually sold a hot dog in the last 8 years,
mm-hmm.
they're going to get in some trouble there from a regulation standpoint. Where we step in is where they do overserve somebody, they cause harm to another person, whether it's losing a leg, losing a child, or anything like that. We've handled a number of those cases.
Awesome. Well, hey, with us this morning is Brandon Bass from the Law Offices of John Day, and we're talking about being under the influence, whether that be alcohol, whether that be prescription pills or different illegal drugs. And of course, when that happens, we're focusing more on the side of the victim here, maybe somebody who got hit by a drunk driver or things of that nature. So we've kind of covered alcohol. If somebody's out at the bar can be held responsible, but also the driver. How does that look when this all plays out? What do the drivers face? Obviously, you mentioned the bar and the server could be in trouble, but obviously the person who was driving the vehicle intoxicated is, you know, even more on the front lines here.
The good news is, so I'm in my young 40s. It's hard to say young and 40s at the same time, but I'm in my young 40s. And since I've been growing up, I can remember mad ads on TV since we've been growing up. I also remember my teachers in the 90s, my high school teachers, talking about how different things were in the 70s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
By this point, everybody knows how dangerous it is to get behind the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows how much you can hurt someone else. And we also know from ads over and over again, you're going to jail. If the police catch you, even if you haven't hurt someone, you're going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
The penalties in Tennessee depend upon how drunk the person was or under influence of prescriptions. They also depend on whether there was a child in the car. If a person's driving with a child in the car, it's reckless endangerment. Thou shalt not get behind the wheel when intoxicated on anything or under the influence at all with a child relying on that person to drive. Parents need to never, ever, ever do that. They face substantial jail time for that. And if someone's hurt or killed, they face years in prison and thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars in fines.
And on the bottom line today would be that, you know, if something like this happens, the person who is the victim could death. I mean, there's so many terrible things that could happen. But what kind of, you know, if somebody gets bumped or, you know, maybe it's not a fatal accident, what kind of compensation from your guys' end do people expect as far as, you know, this guy was drunk and he hit me and totaled my car? How does that all play out with the insurance, assuming the driver's insured, or again, from the establishment that overserved this gentleman? What kind of punishment could they be facing as far as maybe payments or things of that nature?
So the first line of defense, if you're the victim of someone else who's been driving drunk and has hit you, the first line of defense is the other driver's auto insurance policy. When any of us buy insurance, mm-hmm. we're paying for the right to both have a lawyer defend us and have an insurance company pay some of what we owe. That includes somebody who's drinking and driving. So that's the first line of defense. If that person's insurance isn't enough, then we as lawyers, it's our job to go and look into everything else. We start looking into everything else early in the case. If somebody calls us and said, yes, I've been messing around with this on my own for, you know, 9-10 months, evidence and opportunities may be gone. Mm-hmm. But we're able to look into various other insurance policies and things, because at the end of the day, even if the driver is broke but has insurance, they are going to continue to pay down the road until this injured person has been recovered everything in terms of the full value of their case. It's important to get all that information in early.
So let me give you a scenario. Somebody gets into an accident, a person who's been drinking hits another car, and the person who'd been hit is going back and forth with insurance. As you mentioned, 9 months is probably too long before you get a hold of a lawyer. How quickly do they need to reach out to an attorney to say, hey, maybe the insurance is screwing me around a little bit? Maybe, you know, they're trying to get out of it, and here's what happened. Do they need to contact you guys immediately just to be safe?
It's a great question. I would call a lawyer as soon as you know you're hurt. Mm-hmm. Okay? If all you have is problems with your car, you may call across. You know, we give out advice to people sometimes, say, here's what you might be looking at or things like that. But at the end of the day, if you can get your car fixed and get back on the road, usually you need that in order to get to work the next day.
Right.
You want to move on those parts real quickly. That's certainly understandable. But if you're hurt and you're having to go see a doctor, well, you got all kinds of insurance getting involved. You got your health insurance kicking in, and they may say, we do want to pay mm-hmm. instead of the auto insurance. Or they may say, we're not going to pay because of the auto insurance. You've got your own auto insurance coming in and saying, we want to investigate. You got a whole bunch of companies out there that are probably not working for you. Mm-hmm. They're probably working against you. They do it every single day, so they know what materials to gather. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't wait months. Honestly, I'd call right away. If the answer is, you can take care of that on your own, here's a little bit of information. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'd rather get that information from a lawyer rather than just guess and find out, well, A, we could have gotten the evidence early on. We mm-hmm. could have gathered some statements, but those are gone. We could have taken photographs to show there's no skid marks on the road, but that's all been washed away by 3 storms in the meantime. Mm-hmm. I would just take care of it right away. It's the safest course of action for anybody.
Awesome. Well, some great information so far, and we're just getting started. The second half of Action Line right around the corner. With us, Brandon Bass with the Law Offices of John Day. We're taking your calls, 615-893-1450. If you have any questions today, give us a call or text us at that same number. That's 615-893-1450. We'd be happy to get anything cleared up for you that you might need. We'll be right back, folks.
This is Chip Walters, and you're listening to Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station.
WGNS, your good neighbor station.
Rutherford County's place to talk.
Hi, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. I'm the guitar tech here. I do setups and repairs. The setup is where you make your guitar play as well as it ever will, whether you're a professional or a beginner. You need this done at least a couple of times a year to get the most out of your instrument. We also have lessons, $25 for a half hour of keys, anything with strings, and drums. Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church, right across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
I'm Peter Demas, inviting you to eat with our family at Demas's Restaurant. There are so many ways that people give gifts these days, and you know, a lot of times the simplest solution is just getting gift cards to their favorite spots. You don't have to worry about sizes. You don't have to worry about what they like. Gift cards to Demas's is great. It's great whether you want to give to teachers. Gift cards are one of my favorite things. I encourage you to get gift cards from us. This is Peter Demas, and I'm inviting your family to come eat with my family at Demas's Restaurant at 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
I was thinking about eating healthy. Then I remembered I hate kale. That's where GNC Mega Men One Daily Multivitamins come in. 39 nutrients, immune support, and a truckload of high-quality ingredients, all for $9.99. That's a 50% price reduction, so I can do something good for my everyday wellness, feel less guilty about my eating habits, and not spend a ton. It's a mega multi for men who know what they want, and it's not kale. Visit GNC or GNC.com/multis to get all your wellness essentials starting at $9.99.
Hey, there's a new type of account takeover attack called lateral phishing.
It's a serious threat. Cyber criminals hijack your email account and use it to launch phishing attacks on your internal and external contacts.
What if they attack us?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda Total Email Protection.
So we're secured?
Completely. With the industry's best layered defense against attacks, including account takeover and phishing.
Well, that's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda. Your journey secured.
See a few spotty showers and thunderstorms possible late this afternoon. Otherwise, a blend of clouds and sunshine develops, a high in the upper 90s. Winds out of the northwest around 5 to 10. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 71.
Good morning. Trying to wrap up that nasty wreck over in Smyrna that happened earlier on Sam Brindley Parkway at Stonecrest. Still quite a bit of traffic volume out here on 24 westbound. Trying to get up through that stretch of construction there. Hickory Hollow Parkway continuing towards Nashville. Give yourself extra travel time. Around the Neighborhood Oil Change can come to you at home or work, saving you time and money. Call 709-2645. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
Rutherford Issues with Brian Barrett, hitting right at what matters most to all of us here in the heart of Tennessee. Weekday mornings at 10 on WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
Alrighty, folks, we are back. How about that? A quick look at traffic and weather, and that weather is looking a-okay. I think we're going to be in good shape this weekend. Should be a nice weekend to get out and about. And don't forget to check that swap and shop list, because we do have some garage sales, yard sales, things of that that are going on this weekend as well. So lots happening here in the WGNS community, so make sure you're a part of that. Hey, with us this morning on Action Line as we get into the second half, Brandon Bass, who's with Law Offices of John Day. We've been talking about being under the influence, what that looks like if you're in an accident and the, you know, the other person maybe is under the influence. The establishment that was serving them could be in trouble. The person who's driving under the influence obviously could be in trouble. I wanted to kind of pick back up where we left off. Is there, and I know this had been the case before, are there caps as far as a payment as somebody who gets in a DUI accident, as far as how much they might have to pay out? Is there any kind of laws in place where if somebody, you know, crashes into a vehicle and they've been drinking and they say, well, you know, you're on the line for X amount of money payment, but there's a cap. You can't go higher than this. Is that still the case?
Sort of. Tennessee has a law in place for the last 8 years that says that no matter how badly hurt somebody is, or if they've lost a loved one, mm-hmm. they can't get more than $750,000 for their human loss, for the emotional loss, for scars, or et cetera. And there was a little bit of exceptions to that, some minor exceptions to it. But that law does not benefit someone who has either committed a felony or was under the influence, was illegally intoxicated at the time that they caused injury to another. So a drunk driver, somebody who's high on pills, high on illegal drugs, or anything like that, they give up that benefit whatsoever, and they owe the total loss for the person. There's another component of that as well. Tennessee has what's called punitive damages. You see that sometimes in TV, but I can tell you before I went to law school, I didn't really know what that meant. Mm. Generally speaking, when you sue somebody else because you were hurt, the jury says, this is what I think what you've been through is worth, the dollar value of what you've been through. But if someone does something horrible, if their conduct was so horrible that we as society say you need to be punished on top of it, drinking and driving is included in that. Driving illegally under the influence of illegal drugs is included in that. The jury can also order them to pay extra That's what punitive damages are, punishment damages. So in cases I mentioned earlier, the trial that I had in Williamson County, in that case, the defendants were required to pay $12 million for the injuries to the victim. Mm-hmm. But the jury also wanted to punish the guy for $6 million on top of that.
Okay, so there's two sides to this. So case A might be somebody who gets into an accident because they slipped off the road, they were checking their cell phone. Side B might be somebody who's under the influence, and in the case of B, when somebody's under the influence, for lack of a better term, there's less mercy given from the jury, from the judge on that, because they were under the influence. That's more of a choice than maybe an accident where you see in case A somebody hits a puddle and slides off the road or something like that.
100%. The fact is, we do not, as a policy matter, we do not give drivers who are illegally under the influence. I keep using that phrase broadly because it includes drinking. We allow people to drink. We don't allow them to drink too much and drive. Mm-hmm. Or under the influence of illegal drugs, or even if they have a prescription, if they have an opioid prescription and they don't need to be getting behind the wheel because they've it says do not operate heavy machinery, et cetera, on it. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's driving while they're illegally intoxicated gets no protections whatsoever. They are subject. Another circumstance is, ordinarily, if somebody causes harm to another, mm-hmm. if you give the example of somebody looking at their phone when they shouldn't, mm-hmm. Or checking in the back seat to see if they packed up their briefcase on the way to work, if they're just careless, mm-hmm. then they can, if all else fails, they can declare bankruptcy. They can say, look, I'll give you every dollar I have right now, but I've got to move on with my life at some point. Mm-hmm. Okay? They can declare bankruptcy. Somebody who is illegally intoxicated gives up even that opportunity. They will pay every dollar based on every dollar they make for the rest of their lives because it is something that we have judged as society for the last 30, 40 years. We're not going to tolerate.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a phone call if you don't mind. And we got a listener here pulled up who's patiently been waiting.
Certainly.
Good morning. You're on with WGNS.
Yes. Good morning. I want to know about bonds in Rutherford County. If you pay your bond and then so that you can get out of jail and wait until your hearing comes up, do you get that money back?
It's a great question. So, And typically speaking, when someone pays a bail bond, they usually end up putting up 10% of the money themselves, and the bail bondsman pays the rest. That's the way most people handle it. So if the judge says your bond is $1,000, and for $1,000 guaranteed, $1,000 is used to guarantee that you'll show back up for the hearing and that you won't move to South Dakota in the meantime or something, you pay the You pay the $1,000, but you go to the bail bondsman and say, I've got $100. The bail bondsman pays the other $900 as a guarantee. The bail bondsman keeps all the money. The bail bondsman keeps your $100.
Well, what if you pay all of the bail and don't have a bail bondsman involved? Do you get your money back?
I believe it depends on the circumstances. There's different crimes and there's different standards for bond and released on recognition and things like that. I don't handle any criminal law. All I do is sue criminals. So I don't I don't know all of the nuances on that, but I believe judges can set different standards for that. If you pay, in most cases, if you actually do pay all of the bond yourself or with your family gathering up the money, I think in most cases you can get it back, but I'd hate to say all the time because I believe judges can put down different standards. They can put out things as well saying, for example, if someone's charged with a DUI and they're awaiting trial, they keep going back for hearings, et cetera, judges can say, we'll release you on bond, but we're going to have you go ahead and take a drugs and alcohol test, take a urine test once a week or at sporadic times in order to make sure that you're not still drinking and driving. Or they can also say even, we're going to take away your license in the meantime. So the specific terms on releasing somebody while they're facing their ultimate trial can depend a little bit on what the judge thinks is likely to happen later.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that.
Certainly, ma'am.
Have a good day.
You too.
We did have a couple of listeners who texted in, so we can take this opportunity to answer that. The first one, what is the difference between an OWI and a DUI? Is one alcohol-related specifically and the other is not? Are they kind of the same thing?
From a criminal standpoint, operating while under the influence. I'm not aware of any major difference between the two.
Okay.
They're typically referred to as DUI. And there is also, there's DWI and things like that, but mm-hmm. to some extent, it's all one and the same.
Okay.
And different states call things differently.
Okay. And that's actually a question. If I would have thought of it, I would have asked you, because I've heard that before, and when you read it in the paper, you say, why did this guy get one? But you say it might just be different states and different verbiage, but one does not particularly mean alcohol, where the other means drugs and alcohol. That's kind of what they're pointing at. It doesn't make a difference. If you're under the influence of alcohol, you might get a no WI. If you're under the influence of painkillers, a DUI. That doesn't catch.
There are a lot of different specific laws to make sure. Mm-hmm. And our state legislature in Nashville's put up a whole bunch of different ones. I mentioned before, vehicular assault is mm-hmm. different than vehicular homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then even within those, vehicular homicide includes both somebody who's been under the influence,
mm-hmm.
and it's also somebody who's just got behind the wheel and decided they wanted to run somebody over. Okay? So there's a whole bunch of different ways. Whatever the legislature calls it at the top of a particular section of the statute, mm-hmm. they can call it whatever they want. They can make it there's one statute that is it's was sponsored by MAD, the Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the M stands for in it, but it's something aggravated drunk driving, like multiple aggravated drunk driving or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's not coincidental that it actually just matches up with the exact same abbreviations as MAD. If you're looking at anything like that, you need a criminal lawyer. The answer is A, don't do it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Do not get behind the wheel under the influence of anything. If you're at all thinking about it, I mentioned before, this weekend we have a thing where we work with Lyft and MTSU,
mm-hmm.
And if you punch into the Lyft app as your code, as long as you're in Rutherford County and you're going home, it doesn't let you use – we do not pay for people to go from one bar to another. But if you're going home, you punch in John Day 914 for mm-hmm. September 14th, and you got a free ride. Don't get behind the wheel under the influence and don't deal with these issues. They can be life-changing and devastating. There are career paths that you lose the opportunity to once you've had one or two DUIs. Nobody is going to let you drive kids around. Nobody is going to – you are banned from certain things. Do not get behind the wheel.
And a lot of jobs you mentioned, driving kids around, maybe you're a school bus driver, maybe you're the garbage man, maybe you work for a company that, you know, hauls furniture. A lot of jobs require you to have a license, and they might need you to drive. And if you get a DUI, a lot of times, and I know personally, I've worked places where they've said, are you 21? Have you had a DUI conviction? Yes and no. Okay, let's take the next step. But if you were to say, well, I had a DUI, nope, no thanks. Because their insurance on their end doesn't want to cover somebody who's had that accident. So,
well, and you have two for A, at any job where you're likely to be driving for a living, whether mm-hmm. it's being a truck driver, whether it's doing furniture deliveries. I worked at a hardware store where I was driving all around when I was in my college days. I know they checked, and most folks do check. They pull up your driving history. It doesn't cost a whole lot to get somebody's driving history. And if a DUI pops up, you're out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
You're out of that job. And frankly, you should be out of that job. There's somebody else who has not had a history of endangering others that they can hire instead. And then personally, from a personal standpoint, you mentioned the business's insurance. No mm-hmm. business wants to pay insurance and say, well, our business model is we hire people with long histories of DUIs
mm-hmm.
Because we can save money on, you know, we're not going to pay them anything. We're going to pay them 10 cents in the dollar for what we'd pay an employee without a criminal history. They're going to make it up on the insurance side. Mm-hmm. So nobody's doing that. Secondarily, though, your own insurance. People who get in a few accidents, you start seeing your insurance premiums go up because you're starting to look like you may be a risky driver.
Mm-hmm.
You have a DUI on your record. Your insurance premium is about to go through the roof, and they're going to go through the roof for years.
We did have another listener question that just popped up, and this is one that we kind of rewind to the beginning when we were talking about an establishment over-serving. This gentleman says, I own a bar and grill. Is there anything he can do? Obviously, you need to hire the right bartenders, and you need to be cautious of who's working behind the counter. Is there anything they can do to protect themselves from, said driver who was overserved, or probably not?
It's an excellent question. So first of all, not every insurance policy for a bar or restaurant
mm-hmm.
includes coverage for overserving. So I would pay for that extra insurance. The premiums are going to go up. But I would pay for that extra insurance, because if you think about the circumstance where it does matter, if a driver says they've had too much, seriously injures somebody, somebody else loses a leg as a result, and the person who lost a leg sues the drunk driver, if that driver turns around and says, well, I blame the restaurant. They shouldn't have served me too much. You still got to defend the case. I wouldn't want that risk if it was me. I'd rather pay the insurance money on the front end and know that they've got me a lawyer to cover up, to cover for even a really bad allegation by a drunk driver, by a bad guy to begin with. The second thing I would do is keep appropriate receipts. And most restaurants that I've been into and where I know the folks and I know the owners and the servers, they do have streaming cameras where management can sit at home and pull up on their iPhones or whatever. Even they got an app, they got some, and they do that in part because they want to make sure that the servers are actually working and things like that. Record that footage, keep it for 3 or 4 days, and if you hear of any incident, save it so you can prove, look, we can see the person walking around, we see them getting up and going to the bathroom, we can see how many drinks they had, and there's no way we overserved them or should have done anything differently. You also have requirements for credit card purposes to keep the receipts. Being able to show that you only serve 2 drinks to a person, and if, especially if you can see them on footage, is a pretty perfect defense to be able to say there's nothing we should have done differently.
And they might have had drinks prior or after and all that kind of thing, so kind of keep yourself out of trouble.
Well, it, with one side of it, the person who goes out and drinks afterwards, if they're having two drinks with their dinner at your restaurant, while they're having dinner, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. You haven't done anything wrong. And then if they walk out to the parking lot and start chugging back Jack Daniels in the parking lot, that's not the restaurant's fault. On the flip side of that, though, if you said that they had drinks before, if somebody's had a six-pack of beer before walking into your restaurant and they're already looking bleary-eyed, if they're starting to look intoxicated quicker, then you might, just based upon serving them a couple of liquor drinks, you need to be shutting them down quickly. Tell people, just because we didn't start to get this person drunk doesn't mean it's okay to get them way, way, way too drunk to be safe.
Okay. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We got another listener who's called in. Good morning. You're on with WGNS.
Good morning to you. At a bar, a bartender has some responsibility. But what about a football game and you're drinking beer?
It's an excellent question. You know, there was a classic case years ago. This is not in Tennessee, but a classic case years ago. I believe it was the New York Giants, where they were alleged to have overserved somebody. Now, the one part of that that surprises me is I've never been to a Giants game. But every time I've tried to get even a Coca-Cola at a drink, it takes me forever and a day to go get up and get through. So I don't really know how they were able to get somebody overserved that much. I don't know if he walked away with 6 drinks a time, because otherwise just getting to the back of the line over and over again would be hard.
Okay, all right.
That's a classic example. A restaurant, a quote-unquote restaurant that is at a football game, that's having servers walk around and things, counts the same as everything else. The good news in part is, at the NFL stadium here, at the Titan Stadium in Nashville, and now that some of the colleges have decided that they're going to start serving alcohol as well, including MTSU, they tend to do smart things like shut people down before the fourth quarter and things like that. They sort of make sure that there's a buffer in there. So they theoretically could be responsible. But as a practical matter, A, I don't see how you're getting – I don't see how, if you tried to get overserved at a game, you could do it.
Okay.
I also don't know how you could do it for less than $500 or $600 for those stadium beer prices.
All right, then. Y'all have a good day.
Certainly. Right. And if I mention again, use that. If you do go to the MTSU game and have drinks, use that code. We did it for a reason. We see this stuff far too often. So we figured it was a good way to give back to the community. We do it for... We're going to continue to do it into the basketball season. We got it for the Duke blackout game this weekend. You can check our website every week if you're going to the game to get a free ride.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned off air there's a case of a guy who had been putting on, and this kind of goes back to the responsibility of the over-server. A gentleman had got some kegs for a graduation party, I believe you said it was, and you kind of take this from here. What happened there?
Sure, there's a classic case in Tennessee that really it sets out exactly where the dividing line is under the law. Okay, and I'll explain that part in a minute because law and facts are a little different. But under the law, this mom and dad fairly wealthy mom and dad decided to host a high school graduation party for their kids, and they bought a bunch of alcohol, a bunch of kegs, and said, everybody come on over to our house. And then they started playing drinking games with the kids as well, and somewhat predictably, some of those 18-year-old kids who were underage had way too much to drink. One of them drove off and seriously injured. I can't remember if they seriously injured or killed the person, but they left the party, had too much to drink, hurt or killed somebody. And the person who was injured filed a lawsuit against not just the drunk driver, but these party hosts, the parents who'd overserved a bunch of underage kids. The law in Tennessee is a quote-unquote social host. In other words, if you're not selling beer, but you're giving out beer and alcohol, cannot be responsible. They are 100% not responsible for harm caused afterwards. The legislature decided that earlier. They said it is the consumption of alcohol. It's the person that's drinking alcohol that is legally responsible, not the person who serves the alcohol. In that case, though, because the parents did two things, they could be responsible. They, number one, they were playing drinking games with them, so they were certainly there to observe and they were facilitating. But number two is, the parents said, we will take up all the car keys to make sure nobody drives. And they started off doing that. But according to the injured person, and according to some of the evidence, they got too drunk. They stopped taking up car keys and started letting the kids have their keys back. So what the court said in that case is, Supreme Court said, look, they're not responsible for serving alcohol to underage people. Not responsible for it. Our legislature's already decided that we don't want social hosts to be sued for that. But once they took it upon themselves to protect against drunk underage driving, mm-hmm. they had to do it right. They had to make it so that the other parents could rely on them to do it the right way and trust that their kids would actually either stay there for the night or be leaving with a sober driver. So it really sets the dividing line. What's the difference between, I said, law and facts? That's the law. That means they can go to trial in the case. Mm-hmm. The court said you're not going to trial on this claim that they should not have served underaged kids. Mm-hmm. Jury can never hear that case. But a jury will decide whether or not a jury thinks it was okay for them to start taking up keys, have a few too much to drink themselves, and stop that process and sort of leave the keys out where the kids could get back to it.
That's some good information. Like you said, that kind of draws the line and shows you what would happen in an extreme case like that, but certainly that still does happen. So we do have a couple minutes left here. I wanted to touch on one more topic, and that's, you know, obviously the driving under the influence, people, and most of the time I'm sure it is alcohol. People think alcohol, driving under the influence, alcohol. That's not always the case, though. We have, you know, the opioids, which are growing to be a problem more and more. People who drive under the influence of marijuana, and then painkillers. Those are three that I think are pretty common that people may not think about as much, but those all hold the same weight as driving under the influence of alcohol.
If not worse. If not, I mean, the fact is when you start to delve into, now you mentioned the opioids and painkillers. If somebody has a valid prescription for them, mm-hmm. they still shouldn't be getting behind the wheel. Especially if they're at all, if their faculties are at all dulled. I will tell you, I can't take Benadryl, for example, right? I know that my head's not right when I take it. Is it technically legal for me to drive? Is there any law out there that says thou shalt not take Benadryl antihistamines and get behind the wheel? The answer is no, there's no law. There is a law, though, that says thou shalt not get behind the wheel when you do not have your full mental faculties. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be sort of zoning out and go through a crosswalk and hit a child, mm-hmm. right? So if somebody has a full valid prescription, that's great. Still don't get behind the wheel if it's affecting you at all. And if you're taking a drug from a doctor, the first time you take it, plan to be at home for the night to make sure you can figure out how that's going to affect you. If it's an illegal narcotic, mm-hmm. if it is, in Tennessee, we have certainly not legalized marijuana. If it's marijuana or any other illegal narcotic, or including one that the person doesn't have a valid prescription for, well, now you've delved into other components as well. From a criminal standpoint, you've got multiple laws that you're violating. And from a civil standpoint, the law is nobody should do what a reasonable person would consider is unacceptable. It's basically the law. you're going to find 12 jurors who say it is unacceptable to take illegal drugs or even prescription drugs for which they do affect the person and get behind the wheel.
Now, from your guys' standpoint, you said earlier on the show that you're not a criminal defense lawyer. You guys would sue criminals. So,
absolutely.
In this case, you know, John is driving under the influence and, boom, hits another car. But he's under the influence of marijuana, opioids, painkillers, things like that. I could be wrong on this, but my thought would be if you're under the influence of alcohol, maybe you have beer on your breath, and it's a little easier to tell somebody who's been drinking than maybe somebody who's had a back problem for 30 years and is, you know, abusing painkillers. Because a lot of times you get kind of a tolerance to it, and you might still not be able to drive, but, you know, so many people go through their days taking these pain pills. How does that look? How do you guys kind of get a handle on that? If somebody crashes, do they do blood tests on site and things like that? Yeah. Probably most of the time.
To be clear, when you're using John as an example, it's a fictional John. You're not my law partner.
Right, yes.
Yes, if somebody is seriously injured, and typically, or if the police are worried that the victim of a collision may die, at that point they will typically test the person for both drugs and alcohol. They'll test the other driver for drugs and alcohol.
Okay.
And they will test them through a blood alcohol test. If it's a commercial driver, like a truck driver, they're legally required, if somebody's seriously injured or at risk of death, they're legally required to take a blood and alcohol test, or blood alcohol test, in order to test for everything. You mentioned marijuana, for an example. Testing for marijuana starts to get a little dicey. There are very, very, very good tests to determine whether somebody's under the influence of marijuana, but they got to be done at the time. So if you're looking into it later, that stuff actually stays in a person's system for weeks. But, and I am not a toxicologist. I've worked with them on cases, but I'm not a toxicologist. But there is something that you can tell whether the person is currently under the influence of marijuana or whether they have been in the last 30 days. And you can start to parse out and say, well, you got a little bit here. You got a little bit of the early stages. And then a lot of the 24 hours or more stages, meaning that you're just a heavy marijuana smoker and you might have had something recently. So tracking that down is sometimes difficult. You gave one other example, Nick. You gave the example of somebody who has been had chronic back problems and has taken prescription medication for years, right? With those circumstances, if you don't get the test right away, then there's no way to tell, except you can do things like this. The person has a prescription for 30 days worth of hydrocodone or some other medication, and they're refilling it every 15 days. You can start to do some pretty quick math there and say they're taking way more than the doctor has prescribed. So you can look towards their prescription records to figure things out if we don't have the evidence from the police to begin with.
All righty. Well, with us this morning, Brandon Bass with the Law Offices of John Day. Brandon, you've been answered a lot of questions and cleared up some things for the listeners, I know. So thank you so much for your time. Any final thoughts this morning?
No, I really want to appreciate. Thank you for having me. And mention again, take advantage of that Safe Ride program. Go on to Lyft if you're going to the MTSU game this weekend, and we're happy to pay for your ride home. Don't put yourself in a position of getting arrested or, God forbid, hurting yourself or someone else. Punch in that John Day 914 code and give us a call if you need anything.
All righty, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, and we'll see you next time. Did an awesome job, by the way. So it was your first time on the air, so knocked it out of the park. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Nick.
Yep. All righty, folks. We have Truman coming up next with some live music, as we do on Friday, so stick around.
News Radio, WGNS, Murfreesboro, the voice of Rutherford County, and the flagship station for Blue Raiders sports. The Courthouse Clock shows it's 9 o'clock.
Technology for your home's heating and air system, the Daikin Fit from Precision Air. It's quiet, takes up less space, and uses less power. Chances are, even if you had a unit installed in the last few years, you can still save money by switching to the Daikin Fit. Precision Air, online at precisionairtn.com.